Black, you have a new album entitled Babylon, and maybe talk about what this album is about. Is there any type of general theme to it? I know you've written themes to albums in the past, but any general theme to this record, and is there any type of concept behind it?
Well, it really started with about a year and a half ago, you know, when this whole financial, or supposed financial crisis thing was, you had, you know, politicians running around using, they were calling it a global financial crisis, and I've usually found that when politicians use the word crisis, that's politician code for we're getting ready to pick your pocket, we're getting ready to take some sort of freedom away from you somehow, some way.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time when all that was going on, I was listening to what was going on in the European Union, and the guys over in Brussels were talking about it, and said, well, you know, apparently what we've done to this point hasn't worked, you know, all these different countries, maybe it's time we have a one-world government.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then another guy spoke up and he says, well, if we're going to have a one-world government, then we should have a one-world currency to go along with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third guy speaks up and he says, well, you know, that fits in perfectly because we believe that by the year 2017, we can have all the people in the EU microchipped.
Mm-hmm.
And I stood there and I'm listening with my mouth open to what these guys are saying, and I can't believe what I'm hearing. Because, I mean, these guys are talking potential 666 here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought to myself, you know, 20 years ago when I wrote The Headless Children, there's a line in the song that says, four horsemen sit high up in the saddle and waiting and ride the bloody trail and no return. And I thought to myself when I was listening to these guys, I thought, are we closer to that Armageddon-type scenario now than we were even then?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I went back and I did a detailed study of the Book of Revelation in the Bible, and I was astonished as to how accurate it was in relationship to what these guys were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really, that was the germination, the beginnings of where we started with that record.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was listening to the album, I kept thinking 1984, the book 1984.
You know, they always, you know, you can't figure out what's in these guys' heads. I said, you know, when I was listening to them, I thought to myself, do they have no clue what they're talking about? You know, and I would encourage everybody to do this because I did it.
Mm-hmm.
I went and I did a Google search. I just put in microchipping in humans. Everybody should do that. Just take 5 minutes. You will be astonished as to what is happening out there right now. It's far closer than I thought it was. I mean, it was pretty scary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I looked at it, I mean, there's stuff that's happening in the United States right now where they're already doing it with kids in schools.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's pretty frightening.
You know, you did a couple covers on the album, and at least what stood out to me was the cover of Burn that you did, but and also a Chuck Berry cover. Maybe tell me about how you ended up wanting to do those covers on the album, how they ended up there.
Well, Burn came about as, you know, it was something that we had been playing around with on the Dominator record, but
mm-hmm.
didn't really get serious with it. And it wasn't until we got to the end of this record that I looked at all the song titles put together. And I looked at it and I thought, you know what, there's a lot of fire on this record, you know. And I went back to the guys and I said, you know, this might be the perfect time to do this now. So we went back and, you know, we finished it straight away and threw it on the record.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's also a Chuck Berry song on here called Promised Land.
Yes.
And I'd always loved that song. And Promised Land was the first thing that we did when we went in the studio. Because, you know, people don't understand, when you haven't been in the studio for a while, playing live and being in the studio is two completely different universes.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to kind of go in and get your feet wet a little bit. So we did something that was simple and, you know, we didn't really think it would end up on the record. You know, we just, it's kind of like you're going in the studio and you need some training wheels to kind of get back into the groove of it a little bit. You know, so, you know, we just did that. And when it was done, I looked at the record and I thought, you know, we've taken you to a really dark place on this record.
Mm-hmm.
Why not maybe at the end of it, we give you some little glimmer of hope, you know, maybe destination, promised
mm-hmm.
land. You know, and I thought, and I would love to sit here and take credit and tell you that, you know, that this was a master plan, that, you know, I had envisioned all this from the get-go, you know, and this is what it was going to be, but it really didn't work out like this. This was like a gift when we got to the end of it, and it was like, it was so perfect when it was done. It's just, you know, it was too good not to put it on there like that.
I really think Doug Blair's guitar playing in the band really stands out to me, and maybe tell me a little bit how you found him.
Well, Doug has been in the band for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Doug played on the Crimson Idol tour.
Okay.
You know, 20 years ago. So he's been in this situation, or associated with this situation, for quite some time. And, you know, he's a guy with extraordinary ability.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be not totally inaccurate to say that what he did on this record,
mm-hmm.
his contribution, maybe even greater than my own.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what he did on this record is nothing short of spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've had a very long and storied career, Blackie, and throughout your career, if you had to pick one thing, and one thing over the past, say, 25, 30 years, what is the one thing that you are the most proud of?
Finding the proverbial needle in the haystack. Like, you know, you got to remember, we've been doing this over 25 years now,
mm-hmm.
and any band that's been doing it this long, there's going to be, you know, everybody's career is a roller coaster that's done it for this long. You're going to have highs and lows, you know. So to try to say that there's any one thing, that's impossible.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have a tour? Are you planning a tour here, obviously in the U.S. or?
We start in America February 26th.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Blackie, being from Cleveland, which is where I'm from, and seeing you guys quite a few times here in the Cleveland, Ohio area, and I'm not even sure if it's in your itinerary to tour here, but if it is, give me some of your memories, some of your best memories about Cleveland. What do you remember about Cleveland? And, you know, what are your thoughts on playing here in this city?
But it was uh-huh. always one of those places that was, you know, a stronghold for us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was always the kind of place that had, for some reason, had endeared this band to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, so it's always been some place that we always look forward to going to.
Mm-hmm.
Are you coming here on the tour?
Yes, we are.
As an artist for you, what are some of the biggest differences between making a record now as opposed to maybe 20, 25 years ago?
Well, recording-wise, or are you talking about what happened?
Well, I'm just talking about, in general, how the music scene has developed. You know, you have, back in the day, you didn't have downloading, you had no internet, and, you know, you didn't have a lot of stuff like that. And, you know, how has the music scene changed for you? I mean, what are the differences for you?
Night and day. You know, and it's not just us. I mean, it's the industry in general. Because,
mm-hmm.
You know, the whole delivery system of the way records are done now is like I said, it's night and day because, you know, we all hated the majors. You know, we refer to them as the evil empires. But the one thing that they could do is their delivery system, that factory machinery that they had, boy,
mm-hmm.
when they decided they wanted to make something happen, it was a thing of beauty to watch it go into effect
mm-hmm.
On a global level. You know, and you don't have any delivery system like that anymore. I mean, the internet, you know, is as capable as it is, does not have the ability to harness entire groups of people and literally herd them in the same direction at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, it's just, it's like I said, it's night and day, and it doesn't work the same way as it once did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the guy that developed the model that we used for 50 years was Emmett Erdogan. He was the president of Atlantic Records. And we all used that model, like I said, for 50 years. Well, the internet came along and destroyed that model, and no one has since been able to develop a working model
mm-hmm.
of a delivery system that gets, and when I say delivery system, I'm talking about the ability to get music from the recording studio to the consumer's house,
mm-hmm.
you know, into a kid's stereo, you know, and until a delivery system is put together that allows that to be done on a mass level, you know, because people listen to me saying now, Yeah, well, I'm getting music. Well, you are, but you're not getting it on a mass level like used to happen even 10 years ago, you know. And that's the reason people say to me now, they go, you know, I was doing an interview the other day, and they said, you know, where are all the great new front men coming from? And I says, well, there aren't any. And I says, you know, and he says, why? And I says, well, because that huge machinery, excuse me, that huge machinery that were the majors, I said, that doesn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing there to allow a new band to allow it to grow. There, you know, there's nothing to support it, to enable it to develop, you know. And, you know, so you ask me, where are all those new frontmen coming from? There ain't no more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to see Lemmy, you got to buy a ticket to Motorhead. You want to see Jeff Tate, you got to buy a ticket to Queensryche.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when these guys are gone, they're gone, and they ain't coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is no infrastructure set up to allow young bands to develop themselves the same way. You know, I was telling this guy, I says, you know, any band that can headline festivals or play stadiums, you better check them out now while you can, because when they're gone, they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're endangered species. They ain't coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a sad thing, and I wish it wasn't that way. And I hate to be a doom prophet, but it's the truth. It just is the way it is. The majors had the ability to harness huge numbers of people and get them to go in the same direction at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
The internet cannot do that. The internet, although it has the ability to reach more people, cannot point all those people in a simultaneous direction.
Ah, I gotcha.
Simultaneously. So in other words, everybody's doing their own thing. The labels could get you to march in a single file in the direction they wanted you to go. That's not going to happen now.
Yeah.
So do you think illegal downloading has really hurt things big time in the music industry?
Well, you tell me. You know, when you're listening to your local FM station and they're playing the same 50 songs over and over again,
mm-hmm.
and everybody's screaming and hollering about how bad it is,
yeah.
Well, the reason they're playing those same 50 songs is because they ain't got no new music.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very simple process, you know. When everybody crucified Lars 10 years ago for standing up to Napster, saying he was greedy and that we should be able to have the things that we want, they didn't realize what he was talking about. He understood that if you continued to do that, it wasn't the bands that you were hurting. You were going to destroy the factory where the stuff was being made.
Yeah.
If you destroy the factory, you destroy everything.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we hated them out. They ripped off the fans, but more on than that, they ripped off the bands.
Yeah.
We knew that. You know, and he was trying to explain that to people, and nobody wanted to hear it.
How have you guys as a band been able to deal with this type of stuff then? And, you know, how have you been able to overcome this and still draw a lot of fans to your shows and, you know, still sell records? I mean, you know, even though there's downloading and stuff going on, I mean, obviously you guys are still around and playing. So, you know, how have you been able to endure through all this stuff?
Well, we were lucky because we were the last graduating class that was allowed to develop in front of the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, like I said, that doesn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so our audience is built in now.
Yeah.
And as long as we can continue to tour and make, you know, good records, then, you know, we will be able to support that audience, and the audience will in turn support us.
Mm-hmm.
But for someone that wasn't allowed that opportunity to develop, it's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings me back to the next point that I wanted to ask you about, or the second half of what my question was going to be, and that is, you know, it's a lot cheaper and easier to make albums, especially with digital technology. And do you think that's a good or a bad thing?
Well, I would back up a second and say it depends on how the band is making those records. We continue to make records on tapes.
Really?
We do it analog, yeah. You know, I mean, if you want an expensive sounding record, there's only one way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you can make a cheap record if you want, but it's going to sound that way.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not making records for the world. I'm making them for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, to me, it's important that I believe in it, you know. And fortunately for myself, you know, I mean, we built our own studio 20 years ago, and we still have it,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it was probably the single biggest thing that I ever did for my career. But, you know, so it enables us to do things that the average person or the average band can't do,
mm-hmm.
you know. But still, even with that, it's still a very expensive process to do because you can't. Working on tape is a much slower way of doing things than working on digital.
Mm-hmm.
But the quality that you get out of it, it's night and day.
Yeah.
It's the way I prefer it. So as long